Today is March 14th, 2019. And this is episode number 505 of the Apple Context Machine. That's a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Brian Chaffin, editor-in-chief of TMO, heartbroken but doing my best to wear my game face. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at facebook.com/groups/context machine. My guest today is likely to raise your blood pressure. I know he does mine. But then again, that's why I love him. His name is John Keat, the devil's advocate. Only I hear the devil don't want nothing to do with him. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, John Keat.
How you doing, Brian?
I am doing well.
Good. Good
to game face.
Excellent.
Game face. I'm professional.
And you are.
A pro. I am a pro. All right. Well, today we have three fun topics. I don't think any of them are technically complainy topics.
I'll manage away.
That's true. I have faith. I have faith. And we also have, a sponsor today. Shouldn't saddle you with that, but I have a sponsor today. I'm pretty pleased about it. It's ExpressVPN even. We're going to talk about that later on how you can get 3 months free with a 1 year package. I'll give you details on that as well as what they do later in the show. But before that, John, let's talk about augmented reality. This is going to be like, we're going to put our futurist hats on, right?
Okay.
We're going to put our futurist hats on. We're going to look into the future. I've enjoyed doing that with some other guest hosts, guest co-hosts even. But I don't think you and I have ever really done it.
Sure. I'll go with that.
Okay. All right. Well, first topic. We're going to talk about augmented reality. I think you had some expectations on augmented reality for a while, and I want to talk about where it might go.
Sure. Do you want to go first?
No. I think I want you to go first.
So I found I've only mildly seen what one of my expectations are for augmented reality, and I think one of the Black Mirror movies or
episodes. Black Mirror was a Netflix original. No.
Yep.
Wait, Netflix or
I forget.
Or is it actually Amazon?
Amazon. I think it's Netflix.
I think it's Netflix.
And, but it wasn't quite, I guess, as specific as mine. But I think one of the things that augmented reality do, and this probably seems so boring, but I think this is one of those boring things that may actually end up being the use case that swallows all the utility up.
Okay.
It gives you the ability to pin screens wherever you go.
Okay.
So while you wear them in your house, you don't need a big screen TV because you could just designate a wall to be the big screen TV wall. And it's not a real big screen TV, but whenever you look in that space, it will know the geo position of that space and know that you want a big screen TV to be there, maybe all the time or some of the time. And the same way you could have a lot of screens, like some people have 2-3 screens around them. With this, when you sit at your desk, you could have those screens there and they're always there. And so what it lets you do is put your garbage all over your house, your virtual garbage, your digital versions of your garbage, of your screens, of your computer experiences, of your video game in different spots around your house. And you have all those experiences waiting for you. And you could also obviously make them appear anywhere you want at any time. But this notion that you would actually use augmented reality to design a home space for yourself in this mixed reality mode, it, to me, is very useful because, one, I like having a lot of screens for the type of work I do. I need it. But it just seems natural that that's what I would want to do. that I have a certain nook in the house that I enjoy working at, and I could kind of tweak that environment and make it that way. So while I'm walking up, it'll seem like a real thing to me. Like I really do have four screens, you know, in the corner of my study. And that's when I go to work at that space.
Well, and there's two different ways that can go too. And I mean, and both of them are complementary. One is you can take the same screen with you everywhere or anywhere.
Sure. Yep, absolutely.
Right. So you can have your TV, and then you can keep your TV on in front of you while you walk to the kitchen and go to cook your dinner, make a snack or something. And then the other version would be, of course, to have information. It doesn't have to be a screen, but to have information, like you say, pinned somewhere so that whenever you look there, you will find it, but you won't have to have a physical display dedicated to that one spot.
And to just riff on that a little bit more, two ways. One is kind of a personal UI mechanism that I'll call the toilet paper dispenser. And two, is the shared space. So one natural place you could see that is the refrigerator, right? The refrigerator, you could have a nice clean refrigerator in reality. And while you have your augmented reality specs on, you could leave a note for someone there. And you could even write it maybe with a virtual implement in your hand, right? Because you just kind of scribble your note, and it assumes you're holding a pencil, or your finger is the pencil on the refrigerator. And then you leave that for mom or dad. So when they walk in and they have their specs, they'll see the message you left for them.
Right. Or you could say, leave a note for Johnny.
Sure.
You know, you don't actually have to necessarily write. There's a million different ways that could end up working out. And of course, the smarter AI gets, the more AI should be able to actually determine what kind of note you're wanting to leave and how you want it to look, et cetera.
Yep. So, and the second kind of idea that dovetails with yours, which is going beyond having pinned workspaces and getting things just so in my study, what I call the toilet paper dispenser, there was kind of two versions of this UI mechanism that I saw early on. One was with the Lisa. On the Lisa operating system, which was actually an early version of Xenix, which almost ironically, I don't know if that's the right word, spitefully, was multitasking, right? Unlike the later Mac version of the operating system, you didn't create a new document kind of the same way that we do now when you open up an app and you kind of go to the file menu and say new or something like that. There, what you would do is the application icon had a document icon next to it, and it was like a stationery pad, and you would click on the stationery pad and it would tear off a new piece of paper from the stationery pad that would become your new document, which is kind of interesting. I don't think it flowed as well, even though it was quite literal replication, I guess, of a desktop. But you had this almost physical feeling of tearing off a sheet of paper. And the other place that they had this, what I call the toilet paper dispenser UI, was a program called Improv on Next Step. And the way that you would generate new columns or rows, you had what looked like a toilet paper dispenser of a row or a column, and you would pull off as many sheets as you want, yank it, tear it off, and throw it at the spreadsheet, and it would drop in the columns and whatnot. So you could kind of think of the same thing going on with your stationary workspace, right? You're looking at your stationary workspace, and you're like, I want to take this setup, and I'm going to just yank it, right, and tear off a sheet of it, so to speak. And I could put it in, you know, in my virtual duffel bag or whatever storage space mechanism that I have for augmented reality. But then when I go to the hotel or to the coffee shop, I'll just yank that out, throw it into the corner where I'm working, and it will replicate my and try to fit my home workstation into that corner.
Yeah, why wouldn't you just have the interactive AI-based assistant? Just, you know, so why, you know, instead of like worrying about like stuffing stuff into a virtual duffel bag and then like pulling it out and then throwing it like, you know, Tom Cruise's ridiculous Minority Report calisthenics routine. I mean, like, have you ever seen a less efficient computer interface than Tom Cruise in Minority Report?
It's very flashy and fun and cool, but yeah, doing that all day would be quite the workout.
Extraordinarily inefficient. Just extraordinarily inefficient. Anyway, all right. So instead of doing anything close to that, why not just have your AI-based vocal interface, you know, store your document and pull it out when you're ready to look on it?
I think it's a fair and interesting point as people are hashing this. But I got two reasons. One is AI is you might as well talk about magic elves. It's,
but
you know,
but so was an AR based interface.
Not really. I mean, there's a bunch of AR work. If you've at least a bunch of people on Twitter that I follow that are doing real AR work and gesture control from hand detection.
We're nowhere near what we're talking about here. We're just as far.
I disagree. I've seen some incredible just hand puppets. And even though it sounds funny, they follow the points on your mouth and on your fingers. And people create virtual hand puppets in augmented reality, and so they're talking. And the mouth will move based on it detecting your lip movement.
That's great.
And
actually, but that's a lot different than no longer needing a display and pinning stuff up around the house and having real workable, real work. But it may be doable, but we're not there yet. we're not there hardware wise either. Like we don't have these glasses yet.
Well, we don't have good glasses. We have plenty of goggles and glasses out that are not necessarily fun to wear. But and pinning things into geographically stationary positions is definitely work that's already been done.
But it's not okay. All right, I get your point. We might be closer to having all these things than we are closer to having a working AI vocal interface. Correct. With our computer, but I don't think I personally don't think they're that far separated.
Oh, I think they are very far separated, but reasonable people can disagree, but some of them will be wrong.
I mean, because like one of the issues is bandwidth. One of the issues is horsepower. Like even when we have glasses, because, okay, this needs to be made. This point needs to be made. VR style goggles that cover your entire vision and fit down over your head and block out everything are great for VR and they're terrible for AR. Right? That's not what you're talking about. You're talking about having something akin to Google Glass with less suck and less intrusiveness.
And HoloLens 2 and a bunch of other independents that have been working on it.
Right. Yeah. But there is horsepower, processing horsepower. There is bandwidth. There's a lot of things that in addition to having the a high enough definition in the glasses, there's all kinds of things that have yet to be developed or yet to be developed in a way that could work in terms of this becoming our new interface for our computers.
I agree, but those are all things that are more akin to Moore's law and likely to just it's a question of time than it is a question of some kind of breakthrough.
Well, but don't you think AI is just a question of time?
No. Machine learning is not a question of time. Machine learning is definitely here and very real. Genuine AI, where you're talking to someone and some intelligent thing and not doing the equivalent of parsing a few words to launch a macro, is far away still.
But it's just a matter of time.
Well, people have been saying it's a matter of time for over 50 years, so some things are not just a matter of time, and some things are more akin to Moore's law.
That's not fair, man. That's not even fair. Because it is where we are in the last 4 years with AI and vocal interfaces are essentially 50 years ahead of where we were 6 years ago.
Maybe,
but right? I mean, like a lot of things have been coming together on that.
Yeah, but I've been doing voice recognition stuff to launch macro-y stuff, like at Next, which was back in '92, and yeah, it was far more primitive then than it is now.
That was pattern matching. That's not understanding you.
Yeah,
that's pattern matching. That's essentially what Alexa is doing.
This is machine learning to pattern match better, to break out the tokens more, to get it to text version, to then parse that a bit better, and then to use a confidence weight to launch the correct macro. It's still not in any way cognition. There's no machine that's going to say, what do I feel like doing today? right? Forget what you want to do.
I'm with you there, but there's also a difference between what does the machine want to do today and the machine being able to save and retrieve your document for you.
Sure. And a lot of that is on the machine learning side. And you know, rather than going into rat holes, which is our favorite activity.
Are you kidding? Are you just meeting us?
Yeah. I was going to actually agree with kind of the spirit of what you were getting at, which is, while you and I may disagree as to how far apart the reality of a lot of the augmented tech is mm-hmm. versus how far the AI tech is. And, mm-hmm. and like I said, reasonable people can disagree on this, even though I'm right. The reality is, it's still an interesting question. How do people want to work? Because some things are better done physically and spatially, and some things will be better done with touch and gestures, and some things will be better done with a keyboard, and some things will better be done with a trackpad, and some things will be better done with voice. And it's going to be what environment makes a synthesis of all those things natural for people.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that.
And so sometimes you don't want to talk when you walk into Starbucks and say, "My dear agent, why don't you set up this thing?" Because people are going to look at you and you'll be disruptive. So you just want to do a hand gesture. Other times when you're at home, you might actually want to do that. So,
well, what about going to be sub-vocalizations too?
Sure. And there's all kinds of things. So my point is that I don't know what the ultimate recipe is going to be. But the point is that it's things that people need to think about in AR, and they're wonderful things to think about, but some of the stuff that people think about is for Flash, and it gets back to the famous what's his name, Tom Cruise movie, Minority Report, where he's doing these flashy gestures, but it's not very realistic to how you want to work all the time. And some things, like I said, just there's For me, and I think a lot of people, there's still something really important about a spatial finder, right? Mm-hmm. Even though I do searches all the time for a lot of things on my Mac, and they're pretty good, but I can still find quicker and with more pinpoint accuracy things that I've put in some space. And so there's value to that too.
Can I take you on a rabbit hole? Sure. Rat hole here?
Yeah,
let's go. A rabbit hole. I don't know which. Did you ever encounter any information about that time based UI and I forget the guy's name. So his idea is that rather than having folders and a folder hierarchy for your files, instead you would find everything by relative to time. So your document is stored near your birthday, so you'd flip through your timeline to your birthday, and that's how you'd find that one that letter you were writing.
I hate to say it, but that's for a lot of photos. That's the way I end up looking through the Photos app.
Well, that is a really interesting point. Like the guy who was working on it, this was in the 90s, I want to say, I'm sure I read about it in Wired magazine.
I vaguely recall some article or something about that, but I don't really remember the details. But I get the gist of the concept. Again, this notion that any one UI, I guess this is one thing that I am confident about, and I haven't seen a good implementation of. And it's kind of the same feeling, maybe a little bit softer than the feeling when everyone was there were two camps arguing about, do we mix an iPod with a phone? One camp was saying, no, convergence is a lie. It's never going to happen. Everything wants to be its own device. And then there was another camp that just felt it was inevitable. There's, I guess, a camp that says, no, we need these puritanical UIs. And unfortunately, Apple has become part of the puritanical advocates, right? They're saying there shall be no touch on a Mac because we've said so. And I think, to me, it's pretty clear. It's inevitable. Not only will touch and the Mac and a desktop converge, voice will converge, gestures will converge, and interactions with them will converge, where you'll have mixed mode. You could see where, rather than using a mouse to rotate something in Adobe Illustrator, I'm going to put my hand on it and rotate it. And while I'm doing that, I'm just going to say, make that blue with my voice. So there you have like a mixed mode of two or three different UIs working in concert.
Okay. And you could, so this is where my other theory comes into play. Mm-hmm. And my other theory goes back to Phil Schiller saying that the iPhone was going to be a thing for the next 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
And my thesis is that the one way it makes sense for the iPhone to be a thing for the next 50 years is for the iPhone to become our central processing unit that then interfaces with whatever kind of interface devices we have on hand at the time. So we sit down at our desk and the iPhone powers the computer and the display, or maybe even the pinned display in our AR goggles. Sure. AR glasses, and we're out on the road, and the iPhone maybe still has a glass interface on it, or again, maybe it only works with your AR glasses, or we're lying in bed and reading, and our iPhone is powering our reading mode. Again, possibly AR glasses, possibly a projected screen or whatever, so that you have one device serving many functions and it behaves differently depending upon that setting. But you're just taking your device and your data with you everywhere.
So this is the one of our other podcasts on Pop.0 where I kind of discussed the one operating system to rule them all. And we kind of discussed what would happen, with the iPhone taking advantage of whatever input devices it had. So when the iPhone only has itself, well, that it needs a UI that works on a 5-inch screen. When it's near a monitor and a keyboard and a mouse, it would, and the monitor doesn't have any touchability, well, then it should look a little bit more like the Mac UI. And when it has a screen with touchability, well, then maybe it'll look a little bit more like the iPad UI. And so to me, this is one of those things that people haven't talked about and haven't put a word to. I believe there will be mixed mode UI on some kind of device like what we're talking about. The iPhone clearly has more, as much, if not more power than a lot of MacBook Pros, and it's only going to get more powerful at times. So it's capable of driving all these environments, and will only get more capable. And a mixed mode UI that has touch, that has voice, that has the ability to work with keyboards and trackpads and other kinds of interesting input devices and output devices is something that has to happen. It's a question of getting the recipe right and who's going to be the company that gets that recipe right first.
But then they'll just be copied.
Sure, it will be copied, but I think getting the recipe right for Apple with the iPhone did them well. So they might want to be. Sometimes you want to be first, sometimes you don't. Right? It depends. Apple wasn't first with the watch, and they kind of watched a lot of stumbles, and I think maybe that helped them. And they stumbled a little themselves, frankly, with the first version, but they got better with time. So being first isn't always best, but it doesn't hurt. In some ways, I guess you could say that Surface is trying to do that and not doing a great job at it. Maybe Apple will come in there. But I think mixed mode UI and convergence into like this one device that rules them all will happen. And then it's a question of how do you synthesize and balance and get that recipe right? Because remember, I think we discussed this probably a couple of times before. Apple definitely was not the first tablet out. Microsoft had the
first smartphone.
Yeah, tablet OS. But the tablet was particularly bad because I think Microsoft had the tablet out for like 10 years, if not more.
Well, yeah, Microsoft was doing essentially a Windows keyboardless computer.
Well, in some ways,
and it was still really expensive.
In some ways, they're still doing that. Kind of the Windows 10 on a tablet is still kind of the same with the Surface, right? But they're getting the recipe better now than they did then, which is not saying a lot, but it is better. But Apple came in and they did a better recipe for a touch UI and just clobber them. So I think the convergence, the toaster fridge that Apple likes to deride these mixed mode UIs with it's totally happening. It's just a question of what's the right recipe. I'm hoping Apple's working on it, or I'm hoping someone cool is doing a good job working on it. But I guess we won't know until we know. But I think that's one true. Of those things in the future that's inevitable.
So it's in, you know, you're talking about all these things that are essentially like taking today's computing paradigms into tomorrow's technology. But what about all the, you know, the potential for killer apps in terms of information, directions, labels, names, so that, you know, you don't have to embarrass yourself by forgetting someone's name, a phone number, the reason why you hate this restaurant, you know, hanging above the restaurant, ways of getting information and having that information displayed so that it's not in the way until you need it. Those kinds of things for AR are going to be what really makes it desirable in the short term. And that stuff's going to happen long before this paradigm stuff we're talking about.
You know, that's an interesting thought. I think that's ultimately wrong. I think the marketing hype is exactly what you say. But I think what will happen is you'll find out that there are very few real uses for it, just like there are of AR right now. Excuse me.
I think this is what I said to the Silicon Valley Mac user group a couple of weeks ago. I said that the AR is going to be as transformational as maps in our pocket was. And in part for even some of the same reasons, like being able to have directions, an arrow for you to follow imposed on your vision, is going to be very useful. And it's going to be very used.
So I think it's a somewhat false comparison, because the iPhone maps, it was definitely cool and it was definitely a big part of it, but it wasn't the only thing. And I think if you look at augmented reality, what everyone keeps saying is it's something big is going to happen with this. And so far, there's been nothing useful with it. Maps and navigation are something that will be useful. I don't know if that's going to drive a lot of adoption, if that's the only thing that's useful.
Well, I think, John, though, that's waiting for something better than holding your phone in front of your face. And that's what AR is like, you walk around and you hold your phone in front of your face, and that's ridiculous.
I agree with you, but beyond some game playing and the maps and kind of the helper for doing an install of your sink example, I'm not sure. I think the day-to-day driver will be these kind of workspaces, these pinned workspaces, and that there will be a lot of productivity from that. I mean, if you just think about it, you have an infinite whiteboard, you have an infinite screen. As you turn, you know, you just have more and more screen space, and you could do more. All of a sudden, that gives you physical spaces that you didn't have for work. And I think there's a lot about the day in, day out with that that is more useful than, you know, it's, unless your job is fully to kind of navigate from point A to point B over and over, and you're the UPS driver or something like that, that there are many more hours of the day where we have to do something else more productive. And so I think it has to be more meaningful than kind of the navigation. And the other problem with what you said was it assumes kind of a real AI that's giving you helpful information, right, as you need it. And it needs kind of a bright level person to do that, and not to become what is the equivalent of pop-up ads everywhere I go. So I think a lot of the things that you're talking about will happen, but they'll be choppy at best. Like, to this day, I find Yelp useless for this reason. It rates a place really well, but most places, most restaurants you go to, the reality is they have three or four things that they do great, and most of the other stuff is kind of mediocre, if not stinky. And yet Yelp can't tell you what is the good thing, right? To this day, they've been around for, like, what is it, over 15 years? And these are kind of like nuanced things that you get from other people, you know, that you respect. It's like, hey, Brian, you were over there. What's good at that place, right? And a real AI can bring that around. So I don't know that a lot of stuff popping up on my face from something that isn't basically sentient is going to be great all the time. The great example, of course, you have is, you know, I forgot this person's name, and I agree that that would be, for me, a very transformative technology because I forget everybody's name.
Yeah, I'm terrible with names.
But for a lot of other meaningful kind of augmentation, it's kind of like my watch. I've turned every notification on my watch off. I've turned every notification on my phone off because they're all stupid.
No, you're a weird dude. You're a weirdo. You have an Apple Watch and you use it like it's an idiot Timex, like a Timex that's broken.
Well, true. And it does monitor my health. That's the real utility of it.
Really? Do you let it do that? I mean, I figured you probably gouged out the sensors or something.
No, it tracks my sleep, which is always hilarious. My 17-hour sleeping binges, and obviously the day to day heart rate stuff and all that. I do the one app I got on this is a complication. It's kind of a cool app. It's called just hit record, and then I could hit record any place anywhere I go, which is useful for disclosure meetings and stuff that I have, so I don't have to carry a separate phone. But yeah, otherwise it's basically a glorified Timex. But I think the health parts of that are huge.
All right, so here's my bet with you. My bet with you is that the bits of information that you can have added to your day-to-day life are going to be the first killer app for augmented reality once we have something other than holding our phones in front of our face.
Well, tell me other than GPS, which I agree with, and I guess someone's name, what kinds of things are interesting that you need overlaid?
Directions, names, phone numbers, notes, like I said, that you've left.
Let's just stop with phone numbers. You need a phone number overlaid, like what you walked up to a store and you're like, I want to see its phone number.
Yeah, sure.
But you're at the store. Why do you need his phone number?
Because there's going to be times when you want to call for something, like you're driving by that place. Oh man, I've been meaning to check if they've got this. So you want to call them.
But why do you need to see it overlaid on your face? You just tell the assistant, call this thing.
Maybe, sure.
Yeah, why do I need it overlaid? I'm honestly saying, we're talking about augmented reality. So, like, when do I really want things overlaid? And I don't think there are as many as you think. I think when you're working, you want a lot of things overlaid.
Any kind of note that you've wanted to pin to a place, like I said, that you like this particular thing or that you need to do something or you know, check to see if they have this or that there. Like, being able to have information that you want without it being in your way all the time will be very useful. It will be useful.
Yeah, but you're talking about basically the note pinning is kind of the virtual space, workspace kind of thing that I was talking about where it's pinned geographically. Otherwise, you're just talking about like a virtual iPhone screen that you pull up. Because it's true, instead of having an iPhone, you could just say, you know, bring up a web browser in front of my face, essentially. But I'm not sure that you're asking for that, right? You're not just having that pop up because
everybody's different. Some people would want this stuff thrown at them. Other people would want to be able to, you know, pull it up only at will or, you know, or control when and how it's pulled up. Geolocation based reminders,
there's a great, another Black Mirror that shares a health space, and you could kind of see like the world according to Apple or the world according to Google doing this, right? The hellscape of one of these was everywhere you walk, there's just ads everywhere, and there's like,
yes, yeah, I agree. That will be awful, assuming that happens.
And in an environment where augmentation is allowed to happen without your permission, that's a nightmare.
No, you want to control it, and you know that if it's going to be an Apple product, you're going to be able to control it.
One would hope. The advertising model for augmented reality is kind of a hellscape, I think.
I agree. There are lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of downsides potential downsides for AR, especially like, you know, one of the things I've noted is that if I control what you see, I control you.
Yeah, there's a lot of brainwashing potential for this kind of device, right?
Not just brainwashing. Driving your car into a wall or off a cliff.
That would be
or into a tree.
Tremendous.
Or you know, like keeping you from seeing your loved one that is right there in front of you. I mean, or projecting your loved one when she's not there in front of you, right? I mean, there is lots of potential horror for augmented reality gone awry, in particular augmented reality where other parties have control over your eyeballs.
Yeah, this kind of almost gets into, you know, a whole mire of social interaction kind of what people are facing now with how much people want to use social media and things, what's too much. And I guess my concern is any important technology is going to bring a lot of good and probably a lot of bad along with it. And people have to have that shake out and figure out what they want to, how they want the world to become once the technology is introduced. And to me, the interesting part is what will the real technologies be? And I think one thing we can agree with, it won't be Minority Report where we get, you know, a full physical in looking up a search on a database. And so to me, it was just kind of the more mundane things that people, for whatever reason, it's just not anywhere in the common speak of augmented reality circles where, you know what, just having a couple of pinned virtual screens is pretty cool. I mean, and that might be what people spend most of their day doing. Just sitting in an office with no screen, but with a headset on, and that's their workspace.
LOL office.
Yeah, but you know what does that mean? If that becomes true, there's all kinds of interesting things. Some are hellish, some are maybe really cool. That brings with it. And I'm really a big believer. Like I said, I guess those are my two things. I think there's going to be these pinned worked areas, and and people kind of to your point, like. A good version of it is you could have a teeny tiny house, but your augmented reality version of it is you live in a mansion, right? And none of it's real, but it could still be quite pleasant. And then there's, you know, there's a rabbit hole there of people hiding in that kind of fake reality as well. Could be a dangerous thing. But to me,
I think the hiding will be more the virtual reality world, especially once we can enter a virtual reality space and it's indistinguishable from reality. That's when in my novel, people who prefer that are called the lost.
Can you imagine? Oh dude, this is so wrong, but I can imagine this is happening. Can you imagine augmented reality versions of dating apps like Tinder? So it makes whoever you're really with look like someone else. If that's a pretty insultingly awful idea too. And the entire time, you could either be getting coached on what to say to the other person based on their profile, right? So you're just like got a fake Cyrano thing going on. Or I don't even know if that's worse, or is it worse that everything the other person says is interpreted and recast in a way that says things that you want to hear that aren't really being said. The whole thing could be just such an amazingly crazy thing. If it gets sophisticated,
we will have an app called Cyrano within five years.
Yeah.
There will be an app called Cyrano within 5 years that coaches you on what to say.
Yeah.
That's my prediction.
Kind of interesting stuff, but those were my two boring predictions. I think convergence and mixed UI, environments is going to happen. And secondly, I think we're going to have like pinned geographic, like workspaces and things of that ilk.
You know what we're definitely going to have?
They're going to be some of the most common uses of AR.
You know what we're definitely going to have?
What?
A sponsor called ExpressVPN. Let me tell you all about it.
Excellent.
To that point, there's just a lot of news. A lot of news about a lot of security breaches. It's all over the place. It's all over the internet. It's all over the news. And it's hard not to worry about where my data goes. Making an online purchase, simply accessing your email, everything you do could put your private information at risk. You're being tracked. online by social media sites, by certain search companies, marketing companies, your mobile, your internet provider. And not only can they record your browsing history, they can often sell it to other corporations who want to profit from your information. And that's why I decided to take back my privacy by using ExpressVPN. It's super easy to use. It's easy to use apps. They run seamlessly in the background. My Mac, phone, computer, my tablet. Turn it on with one click. It's super easy to use. And on the Mac, you can control which apps are being connected through the VPN. And that's easy too. This is really, really easy to do. And protecting yourself with ExpressVPN costs less than $7 a month. It's rated the number one VPN service by TechRadar. Comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee. So if you ever use public Wi-Fi, goodness gracious, and you want to keep hackers and spies from seeing your data, ExpressVPN is absolutely the solution. And what you can do is you can get 3 months free with a 1-year package by going to expressvpn.com/ACM. That's expressvpn.com/ACM. And that'll get you 3 months free with a 1-year package. One more time. It's expressvpn.com/ACM. You absolutely want to check them out if you are interested in a VPN, and you should be. You should check them out. Alrighty, John, our second topic, and we are, of course, shockingly went long on the first one.
I'm shocked.
That's shock. Our second topic is practical robots. And by practical robots, I mean like robots, kind of robots today, but the robots that are going to increasingly become a part of our day-to-day lives. This topic actually stemmed out of the fact that you're obsessed with the Roomba Scuba.
Yeah, I'll tell you, I'm doing a renovation right now, and one of the most important parts of my renovation is I told that my contractor is a great fella. I said, I want no borders between like my bathroom and floor borders. You know how like most places when you go from your bathroom to your
lips. Whatever.
Yeah, you have the little lips there. I want none of those because I want my Roombas, which can kind of vault over those bumps, but I want my Scubas also to be able to get over those. And the Scubas are a little more sensitive to lips like that because I want them just to be able to have free range to clean the house. And those are like the most, gosh, how long have they been around? They've got to be like over 10 years now.
The Scuba or the Roomba?
The Roombas, kind of the first real practical robots that people have started to regularly have. I remember when I got one early on, people thought it was weird and lame, and I think it's gotten to be pretty popular now. I think a lot of people have them. Do you have one?
I have the, oh my goodness. I'm going to not remember the name of it now. Ecovacs. I have an Ecovacs Osmo 930. Which is the one that does the sort of wet mopping.
But I see.
But it's not, it is nowhere near as sophisticated. Okay. That is a terrific device. I am very, very pleased with it. But the mopping function is nowhere near as sophisticated as what you were talking about on the Scuba. And the thing is that the Scuba has been canceled. And you mentioned that the price of them on the secondary market has skyrocketed.
So you'll appreciate this analogy, I think. So remember the original MX Revolution mouse by Logitech beloved by everyone, and they stopped making it, and they made a version 2, which was way worse than the version 1. Uh-huh. And so then all on eBay, like if you get an original new in box one, they're going like for ridiculous, like hundreds of dollars.
Yeah, I bought two of them that way.
Yeah, it's for insane.
A lot of money.
So the Scuba it's awesome. Well, let me tell you how the Scuba works versus kind of a lot of the wet mop version. So, or let me start with the Roombas. The average robot Roomba. It's just a vacuum cleaner on wheels. A lot of them are little round ones, and they kind of come in two flavors, stupid and less stupid. The stupid ones have no brain for mapping your apartment. They just bump into stuff. And if they, the idea is if they run long enough,
it's chaos.
Yeah, they get most places clean. And then there's the ones that map your place out and then kind of have a path to follow and get most spaces.
That's what my Ecovacs does.
Yep. So those are the vacuums, and they just, you know, suck dust and debris into a little bin, and you empty it out, and it's your little vacuum cleaner. And what's great about those is that you could put them on a schedule that they run once a day or once every other day or whatever you want. The wet map ones, the ones that are left on the market are kind of the ones that have, I don't know if yours is this way, but they have basically like a little Swiffer towelette on the front.
Yep.
And they'll have a little reservoir of some kind of cleaner or water, or you could put in a little vinegar in there or whatever, and they spritz as they go, and they keep the map damp. And if your floor is generally clean already, it kind of does a nice little wet mop.
It's a wettish mop.
It's a Swiffer on wheels.
Sure.
is one way to look at it. So the Scuba was very different. The Scuba had a 4-stage process. It's kind of like it was done by like someone that must be very OCD in a really good way. So it would vacuum and suck up kind of like a Roomba in the first phase. It would lay down from a tank reservoir of water and detergent of some kind or vinegar or whatever you want to put in it. Some water and a detergent. It would lay that down. It would then squeegee that up and suck it up. And then the fourth path was to dry that. And it did that just continuously as it cleaned. And when it squeegeed up the water, it would put it in a separate tank of dirty water that never mixed with the clean water, which is one of my pet peeves about mopping, is you've, after the first, you know, dunk in the mop of clean water and detergent, now you're dumping the dirty mop back into there just to spread the dirt more evenly around as you go around. So I thought this thing is the greatest thing. And I think it failed in the market for two reasons. And that's why it's no longer available. And iRobot also offers kind of a Swiffer kind of version of this instead of the Scuba. One is that you can't just set it automatically. It can't just sit there waiting to go on a schedule, because you got to fill the water with the tank with water, fill it with detergent, and then when you're done, you kind of have to take apart some of the pieces and just rinse them off and clean them off, and then dump the dirty water out somewhere. So there's a little setup and post clean setup. And if all you have hardwood floor wise is your kitchen in a small apartment, most people are like, forget this. I'm just gonna mop it myself. It'll be quicker than doing the setup and whatnot. So one, to make use of this, you kind of have to have a grand enough place of in enough hardwoods and whatever that it makes time sense for you to run this thing rather than to just mop yourself. So I think that means for most cases, you probably need like 700 or 800 square feet or more of just hardwood flooring and tiling and stuff like that for it to be worth your time. So that's one thing. And then I think the other part of the problem is that people that have that much space and have the money to get one of these things probably just pay people to clean their house for them.
Okay. Maybe.
And what that means is that the market for it kind of never showed up, because the people that kind of might have a need and afford it never clean their own house. And the people that kind of could use the help rather than hiring help don't have a place big enough that it's worth it. So it never found its niche, so to speak. But for people like me, I don't like hiring people to clean my house. Not that there's anything wrong with that. I just like to clean my own toilets and clean my own home and clean my own place. This is a godsend. And there's no other device like it. And so the secondary market for these things, particularly... There's versions of this. One is called the 380, which was the highest capacity one that they made. It did like 780 square feet per, and I have three of these things, so they can clean enough of it. But anyway, they're I think they're going for over 1,500 used on eBay now. It's crazy.
What were they new?
New, like when you bought it with no discount, I think it was like $600 or $700. So it wasn't cheap new either. But I mean, the fact that they've doubled or more is kind of insane as well. But they're awesome. I never knew how much dirt there was on floors until I when I got a new place and all the contractor folks, you know, left, and it was supposedly mopped. I had to run the scubas for 2 weeks, just nonstop cleaning, until I was pouring water out of the tank and it was clean. Like, it was as clean as when I poured it in. And at that point, you could eat off the, you know, the floors. Anyway, it's an awesome device, but it just, it kind of went, it didn't find its niche, and which is a shame. And partly because it's not fully automatable, and partly because the financial niche that it needs people to pay for, people don't actually clean their own places. So they're not using that. But there's a lot of devices like that, kind of robotics and otherwise, where they seem like a good idea, and then the market never manifests itself. And the only one like that's a common robot that kind of has found its niche, despite the Aribo, you know, dog it was one. There's several versions of little home servant robots like that were supposed to take off that didn't. It's just the kind of the Roomba vacuum versions of it. I can't think of two. And the other one is the pool cleaners, which is kind of like a Roomba for your pool. To clean it, I guess has taken off, but not too many others I can think of.
So how do you think this plays into the future?
So, there's kind of, I think it's moving faster than AI is, what's that DARPA-based company that always has those crazy, like, dog-like or kind of mule
Boston pack, Dynamics.
Boston Dynamics, yeah. They have they have accelerated so many interesting kind of movable robots like that. And the most practical uses I've seen for them so far have been just pack animals, right? Like, if you go camping or if you're part of the army, you sure would have one of these things walking around with you on kind of hard terrain,
right,
carrying gear. But I got to think that the other thing I have seen is some really interesting robotics from Dean Cain, who did the Segway. Mm-hmm. He's helped a couple of soldiers with brain connected prosthetic arms. Where they go to move their arm like they normally would, and just from their brainwaves, some kind of connection that they've developed, it moves the arm quite realistically like that. Somewhere between those two, some interesting things can happen. And the one early prototype I've seen of this was a kitchen, and the kitchen literally had two arms that ran on a track kind of on what is the backsplash of it.
Sure.
And the arms were supposed to be able to open up the fridge, pull out eggs, and develop a recipe and cook it for you. And so I could, as Jetsons as that seems, something in that vein, something in the vein of a universal, not like a microwave where we just heat things, but like a 3D printer for food that cooks things, is I think where this may come out first. Like, it might be the next real big thing, where people can get fresh food, meals prepared, kind of home cooked meal versions of it prepared right at home. Although maybe the irony is that may end up going into commercial restaurants instead. But things of that nature, I've seen a lot of cooking things develop where there was French fry vending machines, pizza vending machines, stuff like that is getting closer and closer where it could do more sophisticated cooking, I think. How about you? Where do you think it's going?
The robots that do things like cleaner floors should get better and better and better. Like, the quality of my Ozobot is tremendous. And its ability to know the layout of my house is excellent. And I certainly imagine that within 2 or 3 years, it'll look like a, you know, a laughing relic from the past. And from the specialized bots, like vacuum bots, I think we'll probably start to see more bots that can do more than one thing to help with the domestic aspects of our houses. And I think that we'll be getting some bots that can handle yard cleanup and yard maintenance and, you know, things like a mowing bot.
Those are out already. I think iRobot makes one and a couple other companies make them.
Those should become more common, and, you know, bots that can, like, you know, trim your hedges and keep the line at your curb trim and things like that. Those will become more common. Robots that can do things like clean the dishes, you know, pick up the dishes and take them in the kitchen and clean them for you. Those things, I don't really think we're too far out from that.
Well, in agriculture, you can see, I think, one big automation that I think everyone sees coming in practical robots would be the car, right? At some point, that's going to be everyone's pushing to automate the car. But you could also see kind of a lot of farm equipment and a lot of so if you're a truck driver, it's weird. Being a truck driver now is apparently like the weirdest time because nobody wants to go into it. So the salaries are sky high because they can't find, you know, enough truckers. So they're throwing all kinds of bonuses and whatnot, but everybody knows that career is limited.
It has a freaking shelf life. You know,
I think a lot of farming is also limited. It's probably a little further out than that, but you could see tractors, and they're already robots that will pick things that need a lot of migrant work now. Going to kind of the picking as well. So that to me is also it's practical in the sense that you and I might not interact with it every day, but it really affects our day to day. Yeah, once that goes that way.
I think within 5 to 10 years, at the absolute most, trucking will be done by bots between depots right outside the cities. And then humans will drive them into the cities. And then 5 years after that, that won't be a thing anymore either.
Yeah, maybe. It'll be interesting to see. You know, the car technology, I've seen some videos of the cars being completely self-driven all the way off the highway, down side roads into, you know, a car park and whatnot. And it's pretty impressive. So my hope is that is, is as good as it looks.
Yeah.
And I hope the demo is as good. The reality is as good as the demo on the, on what we've seen so far.
I'm not keen to see truck drivers put out of business, you know, and made jobless. I don't revel in that reality, but I do hope that trucking becomes roboticized very quickly because the highways will be safer.
I certainly hope that, you know, I'm going to try to avoid my commentary on how great I think American drivers are. I think there's a lot of good that comes from it, and there's going to be a lot of strife. It's not just, we're kind of morphing topics from what are practical, I guess, robotics and into, you know, what automation is going to replace everybody's job at some point, because you could see all those cooking devices, right? At some point they're flipping the burgers. And actually, I think McDonald's for the longest time, and a lot of McDonald's, I think this is, it might be like 6 or 7 years old now, the sodas are auto-filled, just they're done automatically. Like when the order is placed, it drops.
That is a kind of robot. Up.
Yeah, and more and more that's going to happen to the point where there's really no one going to be doing that job. So yeah, those are real practical ones that are coming around, kind of more on the commercial side. And on the private side, yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I think you might be right that beyond the car ones, a lot of a lot of the stuff is going to be more domestic, and it'll be see how, you know, what are people willing to pay for some of these things too? Like those, the moving robots, the iRobot ones are still super pricey, but a lot of these third party brands are pretty darn cheap. They're like $200 for a pretty good, you know, little vac robot.
It's true. It's true. I'm a big believer in that you get what you pay for. But what you get at the low end of the line is improving rapidly.
Yeah, that's always, you know, well, that's what capitalism does. Like the first, you know, few versions are pretty pricey, but then at some point, the good enough versions are really good enough too, and it just brings around that kind of constant refinement that just makes this all more affordable. It's super interesting. I wonder if you're right about the 5-year time span for the cars, like
trucks.
For the trucks, it's been like nearly around the corner. I do think, unlike artificial intelligence, that it's truly close, but I'm not sure if it's as close.
Well, that's why I said that trucks, it'll be depot to depot, and it'll start off between, like, you know, LA and San Diego, or LA and San Francisco. It'll be like, you know, it'll be a particular run.
Right.
And it'll be depot to depot, probably with human drivers for a year or two until it is. And I think that the trucking, the freight moving industry will probably move regulators to regulate and move legislators to regulate faster than the cars.
Yeah, that's interesting.
And the freight companies are going to be asking for this because they're going to want to know what rules they have to play within. Right. And the insurance companies will be asking for it too. And it'll be city to city, outside the city to outside the city. And then human drivers will handle that last mile. It's actually more than a mile, but, you know, handle the driving within the city.
So I actually, you may be right. I hope the regulators don't get involved too early, or hopefully they don't really need to at all. If the industry does the things right, like you always hear about a Tesla accident because they're so rare, right? I mean, there's whatever, we have 35,000 automobile deaths a year in the U.S. There's so many accidents. You really don't hear, obviously, about all of them because there's just too many. And you hear about the Tesla ones, but it's good that you hear about them in the sense that they're rare. And what will have to happen is that you need them to become almost regular, and so that you stop hearing about them. And hopefully what happens is the ones you hear about, that you stop hearing about them because the rate is so much lower, right, than kind of the average rate that humans are involved with. And as long as the rate is significantly lower, you know, hopefully that means that the automakers are doing good things. But yeah, the unintended consequences from this on so many levels are tough to foresee.
I got a fun question for you. Mm-hmm. How long before we go our first month without a fatality on the roads?
Well, it'll be a very long time because I don't think they're going to outlaw human drivers, right? At least not anytime soon. I think it's going to be quite a mix for a while. And frankly, that makes it harder for the automated cars, right, to operate, because they got to deal with irrational human beings.
It's true.
Which makes them better. In some ways, that's good. They should learn to deal with irrationality, because even without human beings, there's weird bears and raccoons.
An interesting thing is, this is the way this always works, is that automated cars will be for the rich at first, and then they will be for the poor.
Yeah.
And the rich, it'll be a sign of, you know, a sign of wealth that you actually can afford to license and operate your own vehicle.
Yeah.
Right.
And I could see it being an option. Like, I enjoy the process of driving. It's very zen for me, which is kind of amazing, you know, when you're in Manhattan. But especially when you're out of Manhattan, it's also very zen. But there are times where, you know, I'd love to be able to just put it on effectively cruise and it'll just continue on to my destination. I could do other things. But then to be able to kind of move from one to the other is nice. And I think there's, I'm curious what portion of the population will be somewhere in that realm versus purists that only want to drive versus people that really don't care about driving at all and just want to be taken.
This will be a generational thing. I think people that are our age plus or minus 10 years will probably want to cling to driving for a long time. And the kids are going to not want to drive.
I think you're right. And I think,
we're seeing that already.
I think what a good proxy for that is the manual gear shift, right?
Yeah.
It's gotta be maybe 3-5% at most, in the US, of people getting cars with manuals. And just there's less and less offerings because there's less and less people.
And fewer people who can even drive a manual if they have one.
Right. Well, yeah. And that
if they had to, I should say.
Right. So I think that might be a good proxy where, you're left with maybe 5% at most, after enough generations that are even mildly interested in operating these things.
But we'll have that first month. We'll have the first week, it's like, it's been like no fatalities this week and it's a milestone. And then it'll be a few months later, you'll have your first month. And then maybe a couple of years later, you'll have your first year without a traffic fatality.
So this is really interesting. This is kind of a really broader topic, but we are willing to sacrifice 35,000 people a year, the lives. We know that happens every year for the freedom and economic riches that the autonomy of having a car give people, right? It's an ugly thought that nobody ever enjoys thinking about, but it's true. And once that goes away, one, it's awesome, right? Like it's 35,000 people that don't have to die. So that's just a good thing, period, full stop. But it is interesting that society for technology is willing to pay very high prices when it gives them enough reward.
How about how many thousands of miles are dedicated to storing cars not in use? I'm talking about garages and street space, right? Sure. That Dave Hamilton was the first person to identify that as an issue, at least that I knew of. And he makes such a good point. We dedicate street parking. We dedicate garages. There are parking garages and paid parking garages. And in Manhattan and in San Francisco, you might have to pay a monthly fee to have parking.
I won't tell you what my monthly fee is to park my car, but I was about to get a place in the city where they were going to sell me a spot, so I wouldn't have to pay the monthly fee. And this was a newish building, so they were giving me a deal. Right, this is a deal. Guess how much it would cost? And I'll tell you roughly this is Upper Manhattan around 110th Street.
Okay,
so not exactly Midtown, right?
Okay,
so it should be relatively. How much is a single parking space?
$1,500 a month.
No. You buy it. You own it. It's like a condo for your car.
Oh, you buy it. Oh, goodness.
Right. So how
much is good Lord. Oh, good. $20,000.
A little over $200,000.
Wow. Yeah. And that's in part because you need a car for the on average 23 and a half hours a day you don't drive it.
Well, in Manhattan,
on average, because you go days where you don't drive at all.
Well, my battery literally died in my car. I had a whole issue of recharging it because I didn't use it in 3 months, right? So in Manhattan, having a car is kind of what you say. It's like, people that can afford it have it because nobody really needs it at all in Manhattan. So it's quite the luxury. But I think what Dave is saying is kind of a lesser version of what I was saying, meaning the cost of the cars are expensive. Outright, then there's the insurance, the maintenance, the fossil fuels, right, that we're willing to suffer, the smog, the environmental changes that may cause. But then there's 35,000 lives a year that we sacrifice on that altar. Right, that's just in the U.S. And the point, though, is that, technology, as ugly as it is, as high as the prices that it demands, it also has built so much wealth, so much freedom, so much
prosperity
as well, that it's worth it. And that's what these technologies bring. They bring a lot of ugly. They bring a lot of great. And
but it won't be worth it once it becomes unnecessary. And like all that space that we dedicate to cars, when instead those cars should be in use 24 hours a day.
Sure.
Right. I obviously you can't quite do that because there's still going to be peak hours and valleys, but,
And some people will still want their own thing, but others will be perfectly happy to have this kind of universal Uber, right? That's just available and sharing and,
you know, and whatever. Then cut ahead to the point at which all of the cars are being managed from a central AI, right? So that from a prediction standpoint, you walk outside and your car's there.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Well, I guess it depends what you mean, what part of it. If scheduling and whatnot, I agree. I think
scheduling and driving and planning and moving.
Coordinating. But a lot of the real-time decisions are going to be happening on that car I would want. It's kind of like a plane. I don't want my plane remote controlled, even though it could be. I want it to have enough smarts to do the right
thing. Yeah, I think it'll be quite a while before. It'll be quite a while before a central, even if it was desirable, whether or not it was desirable, it would be many, many years before a central AI could manage the split seconds decisions that you need to be happening.
Yeah, the bandwidth the terabytes of data of real time processing that it would need alone, which kind of gets us into maybe our next topic if we're done with this one.
We are done with this one.
Which is why. Do we have such stinky wired technology options, not just with kind of in the Apple world, but everywhere? So I've gone down a deep rabbit hole as I'm doing this renovation for my place and I'm wiring it. And I wanted to do what was obvious, which is get Cat 8, which believe it or not is out. So every for Ethernet comes in these different categories of cable, and old ones were Cat 5.
For context, Cat 5 is probably what most of our listeners have heard of before.
Yeah,
and there is a Cat 6 and a Cat 7 on the market. And
there's a Cat 5 E.
Yeah,
which, believe it or not, can go up to, with the new connectors, if you get a new 10 gigabit connector card for like my Cheese Grater Mac Pro, it will do, believe it or not, up to 5 gigabit on that old wire.
Wow.
Yeah, between 2.5 and 5 gigabit, depending upon the length. Then there's Cat 6 and 6A and 7 and 7A, all of which will do 10 gigabit and more, depending upon the length and stuff. And Cat 8 will definitely do 10 gigabit, but it's rated to do up to 40 gigabit.
Wow.
Even though all the connectors that we have access to, like, you know, Apple will do you a favor because, you know, Apple's up, they don't have a lot of money. So they had to make Mac minis, and the 12 cents more it would have cost them to put in an RJ45 with a 10 gigabit connector instead of the 1 gigabit, it was breaking their bank. So, you know, for $100,
are those seriously 1 gigabit?
Well, the standard one is 1 gigabit, and you can upgrade for $100 to a 10 gigabit.
Oh, I see. Lame.
Well, not only is it lame because, in and of itself, but the fact is it's weird that, so let me tell you right now, you can get 100 gigabit wiring for your home. 40 gigabit is super easy because, like I said, Cat 8 is out. I just bought a 65 foot Cat 8 cable. It cost me $38. So it's not terribly expensive.
Yeah.
And it will do 40 gigabit. And there are switches that can do 40 gigabit. And there are switches, kind of Ethernet hubs for your home. You'll buy one of these switches. And there are switches that will do up to 100 gigabit if you use a new cable that I just became familiar with. It's called SFP Plus, and it's basically like if you get Verizon Fios or what's that, AT&T UVerse or the Google Giga Fiber connections. They bring in a fiber connection, and the SFP plug, it looks like a brain probe or something. It's got to be like 2 inches long. If you just Google SFP Plus cable, you'll see what they look like.
We'll stick a link in the show notes.
These huge transceivers that go into them, but the transceiver takes the optical cable and basically converts it to an electronic signal. And what's cool about, like, the SFP cables will do 3 kilometers 3 kilometers at 40 gigabit, and I think it's 300 meters without, you know, having to relay at 100 gigabit. Now, to be fair, a 32-port 100 gigabit switch is $6,400 right now. But, you know, just having one on the Mac, like, wouldn't be the end of the world. Mm. And it's just strange to me. I get why the rest of the industry, like, they weren't looking for USB either when Apple kind of forced it on the industry. But it's just weird to me that we're, like, talking about, oh, you know, we've got Thunderbolt and it does 40, you know, Thunderbolt 3 and it does 40 gigabit. And I'm like, my Cat 8 cable does that. My freaking Cat 8 cable does that. Why are we not, like, pushing this? And it's transformative. Like, if
once upon a time, Apple used to push the envelope on this stuff.
Yeah, and there's so much to do with this, especially like, if all of a sudden you can have your network, your NAS, like your Synology, even 10 gigabit's really great. But if you could have it at 40 gigabit anywhere in your house, I mean, that changes things a lot. Like, that's crazy. Like, that's fast. You could have the fastest SSD kind of, like, mega store in your home, and everything, you know.
Okay.
Just especially for professionals, like, if you're doing video and whatnot, having 100 gigabit is life-changing. That used to be PCI speeds a few years back.
To be fair, your expectations of what should be normal in terms of such things is not really within the realm of most people's needs.
True.
I just want to point that out, right? You have some high expectations and desires on this that you don't even hit very often.
So I think that's fair, but, you know, that has always been true of all Apple equipment, right? It's always been a function of, it's like when you had a 4-core dual chip G5 that a lot of people, you know, were a lot of people really going to push that. Some people will. Some people doing video stuff today absolutely will saturate 100 gigabit. So it's not a question of, it's kind of like that old Bill Gates line of, you know, how many people really need more than 640 kilobytes of memory? Well, at the time, probably not many, but, you know, some people did and they pushed things forward. That's kind of the ethos of Apple.
But Apple, you know, Apple caters less and less to the extreme end of its user base, less and less.
Yeah, that part is sadly true. But what I'm more surprised of is, outside of almost kind of enterprise, I'm just shocked that like an Alienware hasn't picked this up. Like, putting in a 40 gigabit connection is not that pricey. It's just not.
Well, are you sure it's not? I mean, didn't you say a switch was $6,400?
Well, that's if you get a 100 gigabit 32-port switch, all right? I'm not sure the average home needs a 32-port.
Well, yeah, but how much does the chip cost for a single port on a Mac or PC?
So an SFP card, like a cheap SFP card that I bought for my Mac Pro with dual ports, I think it was $99.
Yeah, so the same price that Apple's charging for 10 gigabit.
Yeah, right. And that I think that'll do up to 40 gigabit, depending, you know, obviously once you go up to 100 gigabit and stuff, you're asking for more expensive stuff. So, but that's what I mean, just like going up to 40 gigabit, and why not optical? I mean, there is a lot of, to be fair, there is a lot of, but all right, Cat 8's out too, and it's dirt cheap too. So I don't know. It just seems, it's weird that I haven't heard more of it. You know, there's kind of a new type of, maybe it's because the Mac is now getting so far and away from the enthusiast and pro market that it's becoming more and more quiet. Like, we used to be more towards the bleeding edge, I think, of the Apple ecosystem. Mm-hmm. And so we hear about this stuff that's, you know, kind of out there, and that is clearly next gen stuff that we should be getting soon. And, you know, Apple just isn't interested in, heck, they're not even interested in making my two HomePods talk to one another about whether, when I tell it to shut off the timer, and I'm talking to the wrong HomePod, it literally scolds me that I need to go walk to the other HomePod and yell at it to turn off the timer.
I had earlier today sort of like the very close cousin to that issue. I ask for a light to be turned off, and one HomePod starts taking care of it, and then the other HomePod wants to get involved, and then complains that the device was irresponsive. It's because your cousin HomePod was just taking care of that. Shut up.
So let me get this straight. They don't care about the HomePod too much. They don't care about the Apple TV too much. They don't care about the Mac too much. I guess it's just the iPhones. But
iPhones and cars and AR glasses and non-invasive glucose monitor. That's what they care about.
It remains to be seen. I guess we'll see if and when they come out with any of
that. That is the politest stuff. You have ever been. To me, on the pipeline.
Yeah, I think I've beaten that horse, and there's no reason, I'll let you have your dreams,
All right. Like a good talk show host, I'm going to end on that note because that is the perfect time to end is when John is being kind to me about my dreams. John, I want to thank you very much for joining us.
And I want to thank you for the great chat.
Yeah, indeed. Likewise, very much. I also want to thank the very good folks at ExpressVPN. Make sure you go to expressvpn.com/ACM and you can get 3 months free with a 1 year package. I've got links in the show note. We're going to have a link to, what is it, SPF Plus? SFP?
SFP Plus.
SPF, that's the suntan.
Yes.
That's the suntan screen. So SFP Plus. We'll have a link to at least one example in the show notes. Maybe more. I don't know. We'll figure it out. And with that, I will say... It's like I've never done the show. I should also add that this show was comment. Wait, if you have anything to comment on, add a question, write me at acm@macobserver.com. It's like I've never done this before, John. Our bandwidth is provided by CashFly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for TMO. That's all for this week, and now I'll play it again. I've never done it before.